from the NBC News Radio broadcasting studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful, sunny California. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone this afternoon. I'm Rob Starr, along with Mr. Chris Davies, and hope everybody's having a great day. How are you doing today, Chris?
We're doing great, actually. I just was thinking, I was just driving here in, and the temperature reading in my car said 105 outside.
And that was at 5 o'clock?
Yeah, about 5 o'clock.
Wow, that's pretty hot.
That's a toasty day.
It's supposed to get cooler.
This weekend it is for Father's Day.
Well, you ready for Father's Day?
I am. I'm a father.
What do you want? What present you want? What do you want you to be blessed with? Aside from a happy life and wife and all that.
Happy life, happy wife. You know, yeah. Yes, you know the story. No, I got a new hat, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm anxious to see. I think it's a herringbone, and so we'll see what happens on Sunday.
Not a golf hat.
No, not a golf hat.
Just a really nice sport hat.
Sport
hat. Wow, that's nice.
Yep. How about you?
I don't think my wife will buy me what I want. No, I like music.
High expectations.
No, I like music stuff, and the synthesizer that I want is $6,300.
She should get you a red one just for Sundays.
For Sunday. And her thing is, why do I have 9 other ones, and don't the other ones I have sound like the new one that I might want to buy?
Yeah.
She doesn't always get it, do they? No.
Well, I'll tell you something else. You've been busy this week, right? Around the shop. I haven't seen you there. You've been gone.
I've been traveling.
No moss on your shoes.
No, I was this morning, we had a contest here a while back for Liberty Utilities, and they're out in Apple Valley. And they're actually, they're in Texas. They're all over the country. But they handle Apple Valley. And they had a contest called the Extreme Water Makeover. And what they did is they contacted their top 25 water users. Notice I didn't say water wasters, because some people waste it, but some people don't really know they're wasting water until they see their bill.
Semantics.
And part of the deal is, so if you get in this contest and you get selected, you have to be willing to say, okay, we'll let people come to the house and remodify a bunch of things. For example, they get an all-new irrigation system, they get a new washer and dryer, they get a new dishwasher, they get new toilets, and they get all-new faucet fixtures throughout the house.
Low-flow shower heads, low-flush toilets.
Yeah, and that's through Kohler and stuff, Toro's donating all the irrigation company. I mean, it's equipment. It's a great deal. So a lot of people who signed up for it, once they found out that, you know, this is going to happen, you get all this stuff for free, but the little catch is, they want to videotape you and do a story about it and do a presentation in October at the Smart Innovations exhibition, which is in Las Vegas, put on by Southern Nevada Water. And they're going to do a presentation for 30 minutes to all the attendees of all these different water agencies, talking about what this project was and how this one family decided they really want to fight the water stuff, and they came and did the contest. They also get a free trip to Las Vegas, and they get to talk at the event and say how all this is saving them money and water and things. So it was pretty good. So this morning we were out there. They had newspaper people and TV and all this stuff, and so they're videotaping everybody. You know, I have to talk about what we do and what we've donated as a major sponsor. So it was really nice. The family's name is the Vaughns, and they do listen to the show. So if you're out there, hi, and thanks for letting us come to your house this morning and get started.
They were actually on the show.
Yeah. And we have Valley Soil, who's a local contractor here. They came up and did a lot of the installation. But when they're filming, you know, you got to keep doing it over and over and over. So how many times can you put a sprinkler in the ground, the same sprinkler? So
watch me. I can do it a bunch of times.
Yeah. And we had to teach them how to set the rotors and all of that. And so the people who weren't used to using the equipment, you know, when they turn it on, they're trying to adjust it, and they don't know how, and water's going all over the place. So we had to do all these takes and then wait for it to dry on the cement so then you can do it again so that you can really see there's no overspray and stuff. So it was really good, but we had to be there early in the morning. It took me about 2.5 hours to get up there. So I was there by 8, so left here about 5:30. But it worked well. They're going to be finishing the project up in the next week and get all the installations of all this equipment, both the dishwashers and stuff. And it's going to be a good video and good presentation to all these other water agencies. You know, once you get the people who admit, hey, I got a problem, and they really sincerely want to fix it, that's great. The people who really wasted water don't care, and they don't want to share their story with anybody because they're embarrassed. But these people were really nice about it, and I'm glad they won. And so that worked out good. That's what I was doing today.
Yeah, in the beginning of the process, didn't Liberty target the heavy users?
Yes, they sent nice casual letters out to these people saying, hey, they're going to do this contest, but it involves if you win, you get all this stuff for free. You don't pay for installation,
right.
But you got to let them videotape and monitor the water bill and then collect the data and then present that at this symposium that's coming up in October. Yeah. And also come and speak at the event. Anyway, they're thrilled to death.
Yeah, they seem like a great couple, and you're absolutely right about 2.5 hours up there. Apple Valley is not a hop, skip, and a jump.
No,
here.
No, not from my house.
But a lot of great water stuff going on, and speaking of water stuff.
Let's bring on somebody who is the smartest lady in water news. She's the purveyor of Maven's Notebook, and we just love her. So welcome, Miss Chris.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. Right. Great,
and it's
Chris
Austin, so if everybody doesn't know who she is by now, we feature her in doing the water news, and we saw her a couple weeks ago, and we're very excited to do that. And she's we get all our news from you. You know, it's we heard a lot from...
Well, you should.
Well, yeah. No, I know we should. you know, when we were talking to Fritz Coleman, he gave us a little background information about what he does. But you're the source. You're the main source to us, so we appreciate it.
Where are you at today, Chris, geographically?
Oh, I'm at home here in Santa
right.
Clarita. I'm frying with y'all.
You got the did you get up into the triple digits today up there?
Oh, yeah, it's been pretty hot here, and I tell you, boy, the extreme water makeover sounds great. What we really need in our house is we need the extreme power makeover.
Oh. I can't help you with the power, but I can help you with the water. What you know, you'll tell me later who your water agency is. We can see what we can do. So what's going on? I hear this controversial Cal Water Fix bill is on the table.
Oh, yeah. There is a rider in this federal spending bill, which I think that the Senate's going to take up next week, that would exempt any state or federal lawsuits over water fixes, essentially preempt them. And it's the people that are opposed to the Delta tunnels are really trying to fight this as hard as they can. And I heard today they're reporting that they got Senator Kamala Harris to say she is against the rider. And I think Feinstein has said she's against the rider. But once these riders get inserted in this legislation, it's really tough to get them out. I mean, we had something a few years ago that got in on a rider, and Feinstein opposed it, but Boxer supported it, and it went through, and, you know, much to the dismay of those that were opposed to it. So, you know, these things, they're tough to get out, and I don't know, I mean, Feinstein has a lot of clout, but if she can get it out, I don't know. You know, that's the big deal. We're all kind of waiting to see what happens with that, because the combination of that and the fact that Metropolitan's willing to fund, you know, the rest of the tunnel project that the Central Valley Project ag contractors can't fund right now, you know, that's the... You know, that really kind of set a path forward for the Delta tunnels, but we'll see if it holds. It really is kind of dependent, I think, on whether this rider goes through. Metropolitan, yes, and Metropolitan will be re-voting on that decision to fund the rest of the tunnel project, because some interest group filed Freedom of Information Act documents, got a whole bunch of stuff from Metropolitan emails and et cetera, and they said there's Brown Act violations here. Now, the Brown Act states that, you know, all these decisions must be made in public meetings, and you can't have correspondents on the side outside of the meetings that are making decisions, because then the public cannot be involved. So all these decisions have to be made in public, and they kind of said, look, these emails show that this didn't happen. So Metropolitan just said, well, just to be sure, we will re-vote. So in July, at their board meeting. I think the date is July 10th. They will be re-voting to do the additional amount of the Delta tunnels that the Central Valley Ag contractors are not able to put up at this time.
Any predictions on which way it'll go?
Oh, I would imagine it's going to be very much the same. What was interesting is when they took the vote last time, one of the people or one of the groups that detracted or might have even recused themselves was San Diego. They did not vote in favor of the tunnels, but since that decision went down, they have now decided they are in favor of the tunnels. So, yeah, I'm wondering if they kind of wanted to be on the record as not in favor of the tunnels, figuring that they would pass, you know, and then once they passed it, okay, we're in favor of the tunnels, and they probably weren't anticipating this free vote. But that is pure speculation on my part.
You think they got over their previous lawsuit they had with Metropolitan?
Oh, yeah, well, San Diego and Metropolitan don't get along so well.
No doubt
about that.
No. And that went on for a long time, too.
Oh, yeah, it's an ongoing thing. You know, San Diego, when they had the drought back in the 1990s, San Diego, being at the end of the pipe, really got hammered. I mean, they were cut back like 65%. If you can imagine what it would be like to only be able to use 35% of the water that you normally use, it was brutal.
What do you think of the new thing where they want you to use 55 gallons per person?
Well, you know, we're going to see how this all plays out. You know, there were a bunch of stories that were saying that you can't take a shower and do laundry on the same day, but it's not that draconian. I mean, it's really meant to be an average over the month, and there are several years to get there. I think the idea behind this is much like they have made legislation that has required cars to be more efficient in their use of gasoline, they are really trying to push the envelope to get, you know, the devices and the things we have in our home that use water to use even less water. And that also, they want you to use less water. But if you can increase the efficiency of your fixtures, then, you know, then that really helps out. I'm not sure how much more, you know, reduction we can get from, you know, water-saving dishwashers and toilets.
No, but it's like your automobile years ago when they reduced the speed on some of the highways. And, you know, a good point, say you're driving on the freeway, and you drive 65 miles an hour because that's the posted speed, or 70, and you decide to drive slower than that, you'll obviously save more gas, right?
Oh, yeah.
So don't you think they're trying to do the same thing with the water?
That eventually, yeah.
So it's not just the vehicle that gets great mileage. You know, when you read about all these cars that get, you know, 50 miles a gallon, it depends how you drive. Do you use air conditioning? Do you jam on the gas, you know, step on it real fast? I mean, all of that's going to play into the human portion of this. And I think they're going to, I personally think they're going to push that into the water use. So, yes, you can have the efficient fixtures. Yes, you can have the best smart irrigation equipment and all this stuff. But they're going to tell you, okay, we told you to take a 2-minute shower. Now we want you to take a minute shower. I kind of see that's going to come down the road.
Yeah, well, it might be. I think, you know, the message I think that we all sort of need to kind of take to heart is that we need to be conscious of our water use, and we need to be turning things off, you know,
yep.
when it's called for. I think overall, if that isn't achievable, you know, and people are doing their best, then things will be adjusted. But,
yeah.
There are other countries in the world that have accomplished this.
Oh, Israel and others, is there? But don't you think, you know, people are going to always find a way to scam the system? So they tell you can only use 55 gallons a day. So how about a family tells the water agency, I got 9 people living here, but they only have 4.
Yeah.
How are they going to check all of that? Because that's going
to
happen.
It's going to be hard to do, but I think your point, Chris, is really it's just as much habit as it is hardware, right? On the personal level of water conservation, right? There's so much usefulness that you can get out of low flush toilets and low flow shower heads, right? And if you don't, if an individual doesn't play his part, doesn't develop the habits, you know, you're not going to get that much more improvement out of it. So I think maybe what you're saying is we're getting to the end of that, you know, to the maximum use of
technology.
Yeah, the technology. Yeah, good point.
And, you know, it's like when I was younger, I used to take a shower every day and wash my hair every day. And then I had a baby. And it got to be the point where I was lucky if I could take a shower every 3 days. And so I sort of came to understand, you know, after a while, oh, you know, it's not so bad if I don't shower today. You know,
yeah.
Hey, I'm not stinky. I'm not too bad. And so, I'll confess, since I had kids and I went through that, I don't feel the need to shower every day.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, reality is not everybody does. Sometimes, sure, if you're out and you're sweaty, sure. But if you're mainly inside and you're not, you know, picking up a sweat.
And they say that's bad for your skin by doing it every day in the hot water and things of that sort. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a dermatologist in our family that doesn't believe in soap. Says, hey, just go in there and, you know, wipe yourself off with just the water, right?
That's maybe I'm too old. Do you guys remember something called Physohex?
I remember that.
Do you remember, that?
In
that green bottle?
Yeah.
I used to give that to my kids when they were little, when they were babies to wash, but you don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
It's almost like Ipana toothpaste. Remember that?
Yes.
we're dating ourselves.
You are going way back there, brother.
I'm only 39. You
of course
so.
You are.
No, but, you know, Chris, you're absolutely right. And so are you, Chris. It is habit of what people get into. If you look at what they did in Israel, as an example, and you know, the kids would sing songs about you turn the water off when you're not using it or when you're brushing your teeth. As silly as those things are, it's common for them to do the right thing, and they're really living it because they use a whole lot less water than we do as a nation.
And you know what? I can say this because my husband's in the front room. My husband came here from Quebec, which is land of infinite water and power and cheap water and cheap power.
Mm-hmm.
And he has habits that are very wasteful, you know, and they are habits he's had all his life. And, you know, one of the things that we deal with here, I think, is because we have people that come here from other places where maybe these things are much more plentiful, they just don't think about them. And it's very hard to get them to think about them. Once my son came home, and I was, like, looking at his back, and I was, like, brushing all this ash off his back, going, how did you get so dirty? And he was over at his friend's house, and they came here from Korea. And she lived on a farm in Korea to this, you know, suburb in Santa Clarita. And she was burning her trash in her backyard. Kind of, wait a minute. We don't burn trash in the backyard in suburban Santa Clarita.
Yeah.
But she came from the old country, and that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
If you're on a farm, you burn your trash. So, you know, we have a lot of, I think we need to do some outreach to people who come here from other places and bring habits with them that they don't realize.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm a big proponent of teaching kids in elementary school and high school, and you're getting the next generation because it's easier for them to learn. They don't necessarily, you know, have the bad habits as adults do, and I think that's changing. And the water agency, I've always said this, did a great job during the drought of educating the public about how to save water and how to use water more wisely and efficiently. I think that's a great thing, and they should keep on doing that stuff because it is a habit, absolutely a habit.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I got a question for you. Last week, there was a fire up close to you. Were you anywhere near that?
No, we were, well, actually,
could you
see that area in the Newhall Pass, and that Calgrove area, tends to burn a lot. But no, it was not it did not affect us, and they actually knocked it down pretty quick. But it's an interesting how that area burns a lot. At one point, they had proposed to put a big housing development right up in that area, and one of the reasons it got turned down is they said that's like a high earthquake country. That's where the freeway passes have come right down in the last two earthquakes, you know, and they're like, and that's a big fire risk. So they actually turned it down. But, yeah, I don't know why it always burns up there.
You know, speaking about the earthquake, the one in the South Napa one that we're talking about, I heard this morning that they said they linked it to summer groundwater dip.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. That was like in 2014, yeah. And they've just done some studies and found and figured that the groundwater, the depletion of the groundwater, provided an impetus for that, or portion of the impetus.
So, did any of you hear what they're going to do to, what can they do to combat that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you can really do, to be honest. I mean, the other thing they found is that the back when we had the massive snowpack in 2017, I think it was, or 2016, the year when we had a ton of snow, that was putting a lot of pressure on the earth. You know, I mean, it's a lot of weight, water, heavy.
Well, how about hiring the water train when they emptied the Shasta and have them haul it over and pump it back in the ground? Seriously, I mean, if that's an issue, sounds simple. I don't know if that's the answer.
You know, Chris, I can tell you that I've read a couple of books articles as well as books that water, you know, being weighty and heavy and all that stuff, it puts pressure on the earth and adds volumetric tonnage to the ground. But it also it has a benefit as well when it comes to tectonic because it acts like a buffer, right? It like a cushion. And it absorbs some of the smaller shakes and quakes and things that we see. So, you know, I think there's two sides of the coin, but in all the research I've seen, I haven't read anywhere that they have found, that scientists have found a definite correlation between ground-soaked water and earthquakes.
Otherwise,
although they have in Oklahoma found a relationship between earthquakes and all the oil pumping that's coming out of there.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, I think the bottom line here, it is true that our activities can affect things like that. I don't know what you do about it. You know, I mean, I don't think you can go up to the people in the Russian River and say, oh, no, or Napa Valley and say, stop the grapevines, you know, because we might have an earthquake. I mean, I don't think you're going to get a big response from that. But, I mean, I think it is true that we as humans can really do things to this earth that maybe we didn't realize.
Well, when they split California into three different sections on the next election that they're talking about, which is just crazy to me. I can't see how any one of the three sections that they're talking about is going to be able to finance everything and take over.
Well, I can't see why they took San Diego, and presumably, I don't know if that includes Orange County or not.
Yes, it does.
They took them out, and they put them with the Central Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, how does San Diego and Orange County have a relationship with the Central Valley?
I mean,
that you would want to preserve. Seems to me, if you're going to do this, why don't you just make all the urban? But I guess it's the tax base.
I guess. I don't know. I won't be here by then. It's just a lot of, I don't know. I just don't see people voting to split this up into three different states. And plus,
never say never.
Well, we may vote for it, or the people here may vote for it, but it'll never get through Congress, ever.
No, I highly doubt it. Although you never know what the people will vote for. Just remember Brexit.
Yeah, that's true. This is true. Anything, Mr.
Davey? No, I think we probably ought to move on to the next segment. And Chris, unless there's anything, you know, anything on the drought or groundwater issues that popped to the front of your mind in the last minute or so we got here?
No, not really. Glad that we have water. I'm thankful for it.
Yep.
It's clean. It's good stuff. So.
Absolutely. Well, we want more of that stuff to keep coming. All right, Chris, thanks a lot for joining us every single week. We do appreciate that. And like I said, you're our go-to person for the news. And after hearing you at the Grand California Hotel, I think everybody knows you're the go-to gal.
So. Oh, well, thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, and we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in a few minutes with our next guest. So stick around for the second half of The Water Zone.
Good evening.
Bye, Chris.
Good evening.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Let's talk drought stress. No one likes burnt plants or grass, especially your customers. So when it's hotter than a tin roof in Tallahassee, what are you gonna do? Water the problem away? Not only does that abuse a vital resource, it's illegal in many cities. Here's a quick and easy solve that won't get you in trouble with Mother Nature or Johnny Law. Plied is a year-round program. Moisture Manager from LESCO supplements regular irrigation by attracting moisture to treated areas, thus making the moisture available to plant roots. This maintains wettability between waterings and rainfall, allowing soil to accept water as it becomes available, and making the water more accessible to the plant roots. Boom! More green, less watering, and a great new reason to see your customers on a recurring basis. With LESCO Moisture Manager and Site One, high heat is no sweat.
We are the Rambling Men, aren't we?
Yeah.
Are we the Water Boys?
The Water Boys.
Yeah, the Rambling Water Boys. How's that?
I like that one, too.
Okay. Hey, just so everybody knows, if you were listening to Miss Chris Austin, like I said, she's just a really sweet lady and knows her stuff. She does have a blog. It's called mavensnotebook.com. And if you want to help sponsor that with her directly, you can go to mavensnotebook.com and do a small contribution if you'd like. It keeps her going every day. And she's all over California getting all the news, and we like that. We also want to get news across the country, and we're starting to move out and do things with that a lot more. So we'll be covering most of the country, or all of it, next couple of weeks. So, Chris, anything else you want?
Yeah, I just find that, you know, Maven's Notebook...
Yeah, I just find that Maven's Notebook is just a real up-to-date. I mean, if there's breaking news,
it's
Chris
every
gets
day.
It first.
It's every day.
Yeah, and it's she puts it on there, and it's first.
You can take your money to the bank with her, so
yep.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So
great.
Don't forget mavensnotebook.com. Anyway, we were talking about this event that Chris Davey and I went to. Actually, Chris Austin was there, too. It's the Water What's
Behind the
Magic.
Yeah, we were all there.
And the Grand California, and we... bumped into a nice gentleman who gave a presentation named David Rose, and he's an attorney. He works for the Office of Chief Counsel, State Water Resources Control Board in California. So we had time during the session to grab him aside and kind of punch him with some questions and get some feedback. So here we go.
Metropolitan Water District of Orange County Symposium. It's called Magic, What's Behind the Water? And we're here with David Rose, who's an attorney, Office of Chief Counsel, State Water Resources Control Board. So welcome to the Water Zone Show.
Thank you very much.
You gave an interesting speech entitled Vying for the Wand, State or Local Water Control. Can you kind of give our audience a little information about that?
Sure. I won't repeat it, but I did give a disclaimer first that my statements in that weren't the board's statements or anybody else's, just mine. So
everybody in every speech today is, even on television, they're all giving disclaimers.
What?
I had lunch with him. I went to...
You know, maybe it's an attorney thing, or maybe it's an everybody who works for an agency thing, but I'm both. So, you know, start with that. But yeah, it was great. And it was certainly a hot topic because it's, of course, there's substantive hot topics going on here today, too. But this one's a procedural one, is who's in control of regulating, of creating these rules, of doing enforcement. And vying for the wand makes it sound like somebody's trying to take it away for somebody else. I didn't come up with that title, but I can certainly appreciate that if a local municipality, for example, has been doing something for a long time and feels like it's the expert, first of all, it's not wrong. But if the state comes in and tries to do something different or exercise control it hasn't exercised before, that's concerning. I absolutely get that. That makes perfect sense. And if I were in the other seat, that would be my position as well. But there are some things that do require broader oversight. And the governor has said, let's make water conservation a California way of life. And in many places, it absolutely is. And so we're not going to come in, the board is not going to come in and wholesale tell everybody to change what they're doing, you know, and make their signs blue instead of green. But there are places that aren't doing things. There's advantages to statewide consistency on some things, just as there's advantages to flexibility to deal with local differences.
You, in your speech, right, most of the work that you do, I would understand, is consistent with what state agencies are asking and needing, municipal water districts, metropolitan water district. What about the average Joe in California, right? What do you see happening to the residential water rights for me and you and Jane and Joe next door?
So that's interesting, because that's actually less of a difference for the state water board than the role that we have in working with or regulating the water agencies, because the State Water Board has regulated water rights since it was the Water Commission created in 1913. And so water right holders sometimes are the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. Sometimes it is Jane Doe who lives on the Sacramento River or whomever else. So that, I don't want to say that's our bread and butter, but we've been doing that for a long time. So it's almost like dealing with the water districts is a newer thing for the State Water Board. And that came up during the drought with the water conservation rules we had to do. But with the new legislation, SB 606 and AB 1668, we're going to be working with the water suppliers and the water districts quite a bit more. So you know, get more back on point to your question, I don't think it's new for us to be dealing with Jane Doe as a water right holder, but there's a separate side to that. In the drought and with our proposed regulation that the board is considering, I'm not sure when, but sometime soon, we've already published it and noticed it to be considered for preventing waste and unreasonable use. That's the washing down your sidewalks with a hose or watering when it's raining. That gets to a different Jane and John Doe than we've been dealing with in the past. Not the water right holder, but the end user. And that rule would apply to all Californians. That applies to everybody. That's the end user of water. That's me. That's you. That's whoever turns on their sprinkler when it's raining. And that is newer, that we don't have a lot of experience dealing with things that go directly to everybody in the state. We have adopted rules that apply to everybody in certain areas, but this is an outgrowth of the drought and the governor's direction that, I don't want to rephrase making water conservation a California way of life, but keeping the consciousness up and preparing for the future, because personally, and I think that this is a shared goal, I don't think we should be doing if we can avoid it, these drought responses, because they hurt more. If you wait until the last second, if you wait until you need something, it costs more, it's harder to do. You may be able to cut through some red tape to do it, but it's better to deliberate on an approach and decide on it and implement it up front, so that when you get to the next emergency, you are prepared. You know, it's better to go, if the hurricane's coming, now that's a East Coast example, analogy, but if the hurricane's coming, make sure you got the bottled water already, because the stores are going to sell out. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, the drought that we all experienced a few years ago, up until a few years ago, did spur a lot more attention to some regulation already in effect, AB 1881, right, or the Model Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance.
But even 1881 hasn't really been implemented in the sense that people anything about it.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't have teeth.
So So that was the thing. How do you put some force behind
it? And
that?
We asked Felicia Marcus was on our show a while back, so we asked her that. But as a homeowner, let me ask you a question. So say any of us living on a property, and all of a sudden we notice that, or we understand that there's a large body of water underneath our property. Can the state order somebody to come in and start drilling and tapping and be an encroach on my property to do that?
Well, the state is not just the state water board. I'd like to say the answer is no. I assume the answer is no, but I won't speak for, again, anybody other than myself. But right. From a water rights or just a general water standpoint, back up a second. Water rights are owned by the people of the state. That doesn't mean someone else can come in and drill under your property and take them. Mm-hmm. But you have, if it's a groundwater basin underlying your property, you have a use right and as an overlying user to take and use water on your property from that. Someone else may have rights to that basin, but that doesn't mean they have the right to come in and take it from you. I don't want to overgeneralize here, because I know that there's a dispute in the Delta about Department of Water Resources coming in and taking samples on people's property for the water fix project. So I don't want to suggest that, you know, I don't want to say that, but they're not coming in to take water from people's property. No, they're coming in to do testing. So
yeah, that's a different story. Suppose I get delivery from an agency from Metropolitan Water in Orange County, but then I find out I have water source of my own. Can I automatically break ground, tap it, and use that as well? And can anybody stop me from using that? Again, you had mentioned it has to serve a purpose and has to meet certain criteria to do that. But do I need permission to go do that? I guess I would.
Need permission to break ground.
Right.
You'd need a well drilling permit and all of those things. But to use the water, that water right is part and parcel of your property ownership of your property if you're an overlying, if your property is overlying that basin. So there's limits on that, but you would have that right. Now, with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, there's going to be groundwater sustainability agencies that are local agencies that would have a role in that, but I don't believe that, my recollection of SGMA, the Groundwater Management Act, is that I don't believe that they can stop you from doing it, because you have a right. That right came to you with your ownership of the parcel. So yes, you have some hoops to jump through, just like you do if you add on a granny unit behind your house. But that water, the use of that water, the reasonable, beneficial use of that water came with your property right. Because who doesn't like talking about water rights?
No. Water is a very important subject in California. I noticed that, you know, when the governor declared a drought, and then Felicia Marcus on the board came up and said you need to cut back with all these different cities. Our offices happen to be in Riverside, and I know at the time Riverside filed a suit against that.
I know it too.
And if you can't talk about it, that's fine. A lot of water agencies said, I don't know what you signed in your documents, it's good talk if you had a gag order or not. But talking to some of the people, because we have programs that we work with the water agencies to rebate our products and things like that. But a lot of the water agencies told me, hey, Rob, we got lots of water. We have been cutting back. Our city has reduced water, and now they impose this mandate. and yet we have water. How did that play out? I mean,
well, everybody was happy about it. No. how did that play out? Well, you know, like I said, we don't want to be making drought rules on the fly because they cause more pain than a deliberate process that occurs well in advance. And we deliberated and we did, I don't want to benchmark this against the minimum because emergency regulations have a very low threshold.
Absolutely.
But we did as much outreach and comment periods as we could and changed the regulation through each iteration. And we were responding to a huge emergency. And even though the panelists before me predict the future, and our Fritz is a weather forecaster and he can say what's going to happen, it gets a lot fuzzier when you talk about what will happen next
sure.
year.
Yeah.
And so if you have a solid, firm 2-year water supply, you still don't know whether it's a 10-year drought.
Right.
Everybody kept saying Australia, 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 and we kept looking to Australia. I think Felicia even got to go to
yes.
Australia. I don't get to travel very much, but
I'll give her a call.
But you know, we didn't know. We just really didn't know. And if a 2-year water supply with your existing water use can be made into a 4-year water supply with conservation, you don't wait until that 2-year water supply is gone.
Yep.
So it definitely hurt. It was a tough rule, and it's hard to come up with a rule that applies fairly to everybody throughout the state in 30 days. And so, you know, we did a lot of discussion on what's the baseline, because everybody's water use is different.
Yeah.
But by necessity, I think, in terms of fairness, we had to come up with the baseline of when the drought was declared, because before that, it was kind of business as usual, and everybody's business was different.
Right.
But as with many things, like anything with cutbacks, you're going to be looking at what the baseline issue is. And so that was a tough one to come up with. But we had to, the governor said do it. We had the authority to do it. We had, I don't want to say moral responsibility, but we have to plan ahead. That's what the state board's charge
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
And so we did it. And now what we want to do, now that we're hopefully for a long time out of a drought, we want to plan ahead with the time and deliberateness to make an approach that works for everybody and treats everybody
fair,
the same and uniquely.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think, you know, one of the things that we always comment on our show is how good all the water agencies did with educating the public.
Oh,
they did a phenomenal job in the short time they did. And yes, some fell a little short of the numbers that they had, but overall, me personally, I think they all did a great job.
I don't want to undermine our Office of Enforcement, but we made those targets up very quickly. And I think, I mean, I will say, because I assisted in making them, that they're absolutely defensible, and we gave all the reasons for why we did it. But at the end of the day, we had to come up with them very quickly.
Yeah,
and
they weren't arbitrary, though.
They weren't arbitrary. We explained exactly where they came from and
right.
what purpose they served, and they were percentage cuts based on how much water you were using.
Right.
So it was intended to share the pain and protect all of the indoor uses, all the absolute necessities. But again, I don't want to harm our Office of Enforcement here, but at the end of the day, if somebody fell a couple percentage points off of a 32% mandated reduction, they still were stellar.
And what happens if the people were already conserving water and went into all the smart technologies about water, using water efficiency spray nozzles and things of that sort, where they've already reduced the amount, and then they come and say, give more? I mean, you can only do yeah. so a certain level.
There's an ag component to that too, right? Because
right.
we hear a lot about residential water use and how we have to cut back and how well we did. And Governor Brown came on the TV and gave the thumbs up and said, hey, you're doing great. But Central Valley agronomical use is huge. It's 70% of the total consumption, right, of water in the state.
The numbers vary
depending on who you look to. And I agree, David, absolutely. You know, so in answering that question, where's the ag element fit in that?
So the first point about your question was, what about the people who are doing great already? Well, this particular drought response was not aimed at a person who was doing great. You know, if you were the primary mechanism of the drought, the board's drought response for the board had many drought responses. One of them was ag, so I'll get to that in a second. But for urban water use was aimed at the suppliers. And we had to use the numbers that were available to us. So it sort of washes away some of those differences between the person who was doing great and the person who didn't care about didn't think about their water and had their sprinklers on, set to go on every day. And if it was raining, they were still going on. Yep. You know, so it wasn't, what do? I was doing great already. It was the supplier, come up with a rule. You have this target to achieve, and we're not going to tell you how to do that. We're going to let you figure out whether you need to look at your bills and see who is using the most water. There were some folks that were chastised, you know, who were put on the list, the
heavy users,
list, whatever you want to call it, and
contacted by the local water agencies, and
it was publicized. Sure. So there's a lot of different tools in the toolbox that the local agencies use, and a lot of it, the Association of California Water Agencies helped tremendously with the Save Our Water campaign. We saw a lot of presentations in front of the board by Aqua and others about all the great, there was a lawn dude in Southern California.
Yeah.
All these different ways of approaching the consciousness about it to get people who weren't already bought in. The person you're talking about, they're already bought in. They're already doing these things. And I don't believe in any on-the-ground scenarios that they were asked to do a lot more than they were already doing, because their bill, their water usage numbers, the data, what they were doing already reflected that.
Yeah. They were motivated. They were vested already.
So. They may have been like somebody driving an electric vehicle and tried to hypermile what they were already doing. But or they let their lawn go brown. Almost everybody can do more in most situations when push comes to shove. So the agencies use the tools at their disposal.
Well, there's some people, and we met a lady who runs conservation for the city of Beverly Hills, and they were telling us about a home that had 7 swimming pools. And the guy was at the highest tiered level of rates, and he says, I'm rich, I can afford to pay for the water, so why are you bothering me? I'll pay for it.
Well, that's up to the supplier. They can they can find that person or raise their rates through the appropriate proceedings to raise money and use that for public outreach to get it from everybody else. And if there's a fairness issue in their district, not as between districts, but inside their district, we didn't tell them how to address that. You know, they can decide whether they want to use that person's money for paying fines if they had them to put to better use, or if they could or wanted to throttle the water delivery, you know, that's kind of a harsh last resort. But we didn't say what you had to do.
Yeah.
So the ag question, you were asking about that. And I said this was the board's urban response, not the board's ag response. So the board was dealing with ag the entire time. But ag... it sort of deals with itself a little bit through the water rights system. It doesn't deal with itself necessarily in the best or most fair way, but the system is over 100 years old, first in time, first in right, the priority system. So there were major agricultural uses and just irrigation facilities that got no water during the drought. 0% allocations from the state and federal project or under their own water rights. They got nothing. That's the water rights system. So there's a certain elegance, if not fairness, there's a certain elegance to the simplicity of the water rights system. If they could buy water from somebody who's a senior water right holder, then that's the system. You know, if we were starting from scratch, we might not do it that way, but we're not. So if there's a senior water right holder who holds a huge water right, and they want to keep growing something wherever they are, whatever it is, if it's for export, import, whatever, they want to bottle the water, they can do that. But if they can get more money, or out of the goodness of their hearts or whatever else, want to sell or transfer that to somebody who gets a zero allocation, who has no water under their water right priority in the drought, I hope that they will. They have to do that balancing, and somebody has to figure out whether that's good for everybody. But that's not the urban scenario. The urban scenario, you can't. Yeah. Even no matter what the priority of the right is, you can't say
you don't have the option,
yeah. You've got no water. Water suppliers have a duty to serve.
You just sneak over your neighbor's house with a couple of hose at night. And
turn human right to water. There's a human right to water. Water suppliers have a duty to serve. Now, they don't have to serve enough for you to water your lawn, but you got to be able to take a shower and have a drink.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We also had Ms. Ross come on for the ag side of California. She did the show and said the same thing you did. So
I'm sure she talked in depth about the cuts.
Oh, yeah, she
does.
She's really, really good lady.
We didn't necessarily have to do those. We didn't have to mandate those. But the board was heavily involved in ag water management issues during the drought. It just, when you're looking at your urban water issues, and you say the numbers, whether it's 50% or the environmental water, what about the environmental water? What about the ag water?
Right.
Environmental water, in some cases, got cut to zero in the drought. Well, so there's endangered species that, there's a human right to water, and then there's fish flopping around that are going to go extinct. So we have to balance all of the uses and not put one over the other.
Yeah.
But to the extent we can, it is balancing. And that balancing changes and can change with every different scenario in a different location and at a different time.
Absolutely. We had John Laird on as well. Like, so we had a lot of people from the state, and we were very excited and we're very pleased for that, because it really helped our show do very well for the last two, three years. And one of the things we talked about was the fact that the rebates that the water agencies gave to homeowners as for the Cash for Grass program. And they compared that. Another person came up and made a presentation that if they took the money that they paid for the Cash for Grass program, and they only saved a small, in theory, with all the water use in California, it was a small portion of that, and applied those rebates availabilities to the farmers, you could have saved 20 times more water. And I don't know if that's a push that's going to happen or...
So this is something that we talked about a lot during the drought with the urban rules. And I don't want to overgeneralize, but there's two things that sort of mitigate that idea. One is that grass, unless you are a sod farmer, it's not a commercial activity. And you can dispute that. You can say it's the value of my home or something else, but your home could have an equal or greater value with a water-tolerant landscape. So grass... It is somewhat more discretionary than...
I mean, I can see medians in the street that have grass. You can replace those.
Yeah, but it is a... Not in every case, and I don't want to overgeneralize, but it is a more discretionary water use than many other ones. And so that's one of the first points about urban water, grass versus agriculture. And I said 2 points. Maybe I'll make it three. A second one is that urban water users don't always know where their water comes from. Agricultural water users, that's a cost of doing business. They know where that's coming from, how much they get, how much it costs. So if you have somebody who is using it indiscriminately because they don't know or care, you can solve that, especially if it's a discretionary use. So that's two, not strikes, but two things in the column of addressing that particular use. But the third one is that for many agricultural uses,
well, we have to cut off because we're getting to the 7 o'clock news and we need to know what's happening in the world.
Absolutely.
A lot of good things happening, a lot of bad things happening. We only want the good stuff. There's not a good news station on, you know? I mean, it just has good news. It's always bad news. Anyway, join us next week. We appreciate everybody being here and listening into the show. And the most important thing that we tell you to do every single week, and you got to do it, is to
think blue.
Good night, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week on The Water Zone. Good night.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.